Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I have three guests today, and they've been spending their nights at the Occupy Syracuse site. Ryan O'Hara is a manager of an auto parts warehouse. Aaron Williams is currently unemployed. He was laid off from the Syracuse Housing Authority. And Caitlin Shanahan is a college student and a community organizer. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, let me start by saying that my understanding is that you've just received an order to vacate from the city. So by the time this program airs, you may no longer physically be at this site. But I really wanted to ask you about your sense of the movement more generally and your experiences. So let me start, Ryan, with you. I'm curious to know what prompted you to start coming down and spending time at the Occupy site. And we'll get into the movement more broadly in a minute. But the focus of this first question is really more about you. Why do you think you went down there when you did?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I did actually was go down to Occupy Wall Street. And I was there a couple days before Occupy Syracuse started. And I saw 700 people get arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge just for, you know, trying to have a protest. So that's really what inspired me to get involved in Syracuse. But, you know, the reason I got involved with the movement as a whole is I recognize that there's not opportunity in this country for young people. I think I come from a fairly lucky background with the opportunities I was given. But most people don't have that. People do what they're told, you know, go to college, get an education. And there's just, when they get done with that, there's not the opportunity for them out there. So that's, I would say, is the biggest thing for me.
Was there a moment when that hit you, or was this something that had been an awareness for you that was growing?
Yeah, definitely an awareness that had been growing. I went to college, and I was lucky enough to find a good job. But, I from reading and just the learning I've done since then, I recognize that that's definitely not the case for everybody.
Aaron, let me ask you the same question. What prompted you to start going down there?
Well, generally nothing. I was just walking around downtown, and I saw these tents in front of Chase Bank. And I was like, okay, what's this? I go over and I check it out. And eventually I started talking to people there, got some stories, and the next day I just started camping. It felt like the right thing to do.
Interesting. Caitlin, what about you? What's your story?
Well, it's at the bus stop, and there was one morning that I was waiting for the bus, and I saw one guy with a fluffy hat and an Occupy Syracuse sign, and I was like, what are you doing? And he very briefly explained it to me, and I had to get on the bus, and I didn't really get if something new had happened or if it was the same injustices that we've all been frustrated with for a long time. Turns out it's the same injustices we've all been seeing and frustrated with, and this is just the time to fight back, and so I'm proud to be a part of it, and I'm proud that my city is a part of it.
Well, the next question I wanted to ask the three of you extends a conversation that I had last week on this program with Jim Wiggins, who's an expert on religion. But I wanted to know, for any of you, were your religious experiences or your spiritual life factors in getting involved in this at all?
No.
No.
I mean, I think that spirituality can be chucked up to what's right and what's wrong. And I think that, you know, the people that are down there know that this is right. I don't think it ever really comes down to any specific religious beliefs.
The reason why I ask is we were talking last week about how politics and religion blend together and, you know, the conservative versus liberal sides of that. So I was just curious about that. Well, let me ask you, Aaron, do you think that there is a central message to this movement at this point? Because one of the topics of controversy surrounding it is, what is it exactly about? So do you think that there is a central message that has emerged at this point for the movement?
Remove money from politics. Corporations need to stop getting in bed with major politicians and influencing the legislations that are currently funneling money into their pockets. So, yeah, remove money from politics is the general message here.
Ryan, would you concur with that or add something to it?
Yeah, I would definitely concur with that. I think Aaron's right on the money. I would say a bit more broadly, we want economic justice.
Caitlin, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think they just about covered it.
let me ask a follow-up. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
It is so general because there are so many different examples that people can use. There are so many different ways that that money is controlling and corrupting our system that that's why it's so hard to put in a box or put in a definition as to what we're doing.
Well, let me ask a follow-up on the justice issue. Is it economic inequality, the level of economic inequality that we see? And if we look back in this country, that has been growing for the last 40 years. So this is not a recent thing. But is it that? And if it is that, was there something about the last few years that triggered any one of you or you think triggered this movement?
Yeah, I think I would say the economic inequality is almost, you know, a product of these problems that we're talking about of you know, corporate and big money influence on our everything, on regulatory matters, on the laws that are passed. But it just gives, you know, a certain group of people, you know, the 1%, as we would say, advantages that the rest of us, the 99%, don't have. And so ever since, you know, since the 1970s, the income growth for the top 1% is astronomical compared to the, you know, the bottom 20%. It's just a system that's built unfairly.
Now, let me push you a little bit and say, for the three of you anyway, and I recognize, again, one of the other issues of this movement is that one person doesn't speak for the entire movement, but at least to the three of you, what is the problem with that? What's the problem with having the 1% have what they have versus the 99%? Is it just a basic question of balance and fairness, or is it something else?
I would say it's opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, in any system, there's going to be rich and poor, and we definitely understand that. But I think that right now, I mean, we... like, I'm afraid of being in debt till I'm 35 just so I can get a college degree, you know, where I can't control, you know, whether my tax dollars are going to more education for myself and, like, the children that I'm going to have someday, or if they're, you know what I mean? The top 1% have enough power in their money to control my money, too, and to control your money and our tax dollars and where those are going and what decisions our politicians are making, and it doesn't leave us a lot of opportunity to have control over our own system right now. So we're going to take the control back.
So what I'm hearing in that is a suspicion of that level of accumulation of power reflected in that kind of narrow band of people controlling that much wealth. And I'm Grant Reher. I'm speaking with Ryan O'Hara, Aaron Williams, and Caitlin Shanahan, who are currently part of the Occupy Syracuse version of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Caitlin, let me come back to you with this, and I want to hear what your colleagues have to say about it too. But do you think so far, thinking about this movement, thinking about what you see in terms of recent developments in American politics, that you've moved the dial at all? And if so, how?
It's absolutely going to have an effect because, I mean, there's nobody who can really ignore this. You know what I mean? This is everywhere. I mean, this is hundreds and hundreds of cities across the world. This is, you see it come up in the media. I mean, if South Park's already made an episode about it, like, we've definitely made enough noise. And so I think that this is something that most people, when they take the time to pay attention to it, are in support of. And as much as it's not about elected officials, they're going to, you know, in campaigns, they're going to be thinking about how many Americans are in support of what we're doing, and it's absolutely going to play a role. It's already going to have an effect.
I want to come back to the campaign issue in a minute, but Ryan, do you think that there's been an effect so far, and what would you
say?
Yeah, I
would say there definitely has, and it's been a shift in the dialogue. You know, people are talking about these issues now. You know, you turn on the news and it's fairly common to hear, you know, we are the 99%. But I think this is a fairly common criticism of this movement. And I think if you look at any social movement in this country and say, you know, you're 3 months in now, what have you done? Hmm. You know, we're getting started.
And Aaron, I wanted to look forward a bit, too, and ask you this question. And again, I want to just recall that no one speaks for the entire movement. I've heard this from you folks, but nonetheless, thinking about your own views, what are your ambitions for this movement going forward? What would you like to see
I'm sorry, but I'd like to see utopian society, not as it's viewed by like satirists and things, but real utopia, like no one is more equal than the other, and that's what system we're operating on right now. I think there's a lot of discrimination. It's not on the surface, but there's a lot of discrimination against those who have not received as many opportunities as those who have. To see that disappear, that would be great.
Well, you're aiming high, that's for sure. Other two folks here, Ryan, Caitlin, do you have anything you want to add to what Aaron says for the ambitions that you have for this movement?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you have to aim high, or else you're never going to truly achieve lasting change. But I think, you know, eliminating the discriminatory factors that are built into our system is a very, you know, noble course.
I want to see more transparency in, I mean, I could say just our political system, but in everything, in the places that we're putting our consumer dollar, the places that we're putting our tax dollars. I want to see full transparency in that. And I think right now the average citizens have more of an opportunity to communicate and share information, and this is a huge opportunity for us to have that. But I think that the powers that be, everything that they're doing should be flat out in the open for everybody to see.
How about something in the more sort of short-term immediate, because you've all sketched out big things in one way or another, say within the next year. And again, I know that you, the movement, I guess I have to be careful here, you, but the movement has been pushed to specify these things more carefully. But anything in the next year that you would have as a goal that you'd want to see different? Ryan, you look like you've got something you want to put forward there.
Yeah. One thing we're working on right now is corporate personhood, where our judiciary in this country has interpreted the word person in our Constitution to also refer to corporations in some instances, giving them certain rights that were certainly never intended for them. So I think, you know, short, medium term, I would like to see support build for a constitutional amendment specifying that corporations are not people and that money in politics does not equate to free speech.
I'm talking with Ryan O'Hara, Aaron Williams, and Caitlin Shanahan. They're participants in the Occupy Wall Street movement here in Syracuse, Occupy Syracuse, as it's known. Well, Caitlin, let me ask you this question about politics. I said before I'd come back to this. Can you see yourselves in this movement or yourself working on behalf of or trying to defeat certain candidates next fall?
No, I don't really see that happen because it's not – none of these issues come down to one person or one elected official. You know, it's things that are ingrained in our system. So definitely – yeah, I don't see us focusing really on one candidate.
Aaron, do you have the same view of this?
Yeah, the Occupy movement as a whole has been really rigorously nonpartisan, and to take offense against a certain politician in the system, they're just products of the system. Really, we can't put a face on injustice because injustice is everywhere. So what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the system and not those participants in it. That's not our goal.
Well, let me push, and Ryan, I'll be pushing you, even though it's your colleagues that just answered this, but, you know, one of the things, if you think about the Tea Party, that made them so effective early on was are starting to get involved in the electoral system and getting some candidates elected and other candidates defeated. So you don't see this as – are you in agreement with your colleagues on this, or do you think next fall you might start making some choices about who you're getting behind?
Yeah, I think one of the first things we decided very early on is that we weren't going to support or endorse any political parties or candidates. So I think, I'm totally in agreement with that. I think the change that we're pushing for, you know, we're not going to – see it through getting any one politician elected. It needs to be systemic change.
Caitlin, let me come back to you with this. This is a question about what's been happening at the site. What's the most surprising thing that's happened to you at the site so far?
If you look at what we're doing down there, and this still blows my mind every day, is if you go down there and you look around, almost everything has been from this, like, very few things have been bought with money. You know what I mean? Like, I've brought down, like, a table and a tent, you know what I mean? But, like, it's just been people in the community who want to see this work, who have brought down, you know, everything and anything that we need. Sandbags, like, I mean, if you... a bunch of clothes, blankets, you know. When people see that we have a need for something, obviously food as well. And it's beautiful. It's this, you know, the larger community of Syracuse coming together in this one location to make it work. And, I mean, it's so easy to lose faith in humanity, and the fact that we've been able to build this little community down there and make it work for so long just absolutely boggles my mind every day.
Interesting. Brian, anything that surprised you?
Yeah, I would say just the range of people that have gotten involved. You know, we have young people, old people, students working. And even, as you mentioned, we have a few Tea Partiers that have been involved all along.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, they recognize that we're, you know, we're fighting these influences on our government. At its most basic level, I think there is a bit of common ground there.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guests are three folks from the Occupy Syracuse site. Aaron, let me ask you this, and you've talked about how, and all three of you have talked about how this is not a partisan movement. You're not going to endorse candidates. But let me talk about a specific political figure. Let's do a thought experiment. Let's say that President Obama invited you to the White House to consult with you about how he should be running his campaign from here out. What kind of advice would you give him in terms of the process?
I don't really think this is a time to be suggesting a solution for the problem. It's only to point it out. The fact is, it's been going on behind the scenes for decades, and it's too big of a problem right now to come up with a real workable solution. However, in a perfect world, I would just suggest total systemic change. I don't know what to, but it definitely the current system needs to be reformed.
So you'd want to see him spend more time talking about these problems that you three of you have been articulating. Right. Ryan, Caitlin, what do you have advice for the president in a campaign the next year?
I would tell him to stop taking money from banks and Wall Street firms. Stop inviting people from Wall Street into his into his administration, and actually start living up to some of the things he promised to people, some of the hopey, changey kind of things.
Caitlin, any thoughts from you?
I guess it goes back to what I said before, is just full transparency. Like, if I think it'd be a really interesting thing to see if a candidate actually, like, laid out, like, this is everything dishonest I have done to you. This is everything I know, like, you know, that I've seen happen around me in the White House. And see if you could actually, I mean, it'd make a lot of people with a lot of money really upset, but that might actually, you know, win over the 99%. I don't think it would work for him, and I'm not very good at giving campaign advice, but
so starting over with a clean slate is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, just laying everything out that he's seen instead of playing by the game.
Let me stick with you for a minute and ask you this question about the experience of all of this. Being a college student and being down there, how has that played out with your other fellow students? Do you talk to them about this experience? How do they view this? Do they see you as having this sort of odd thing you're doing? Or tell me about that.
Most of the time, standing outside, people will look to me and be like, I can't believe you sleep in this. But especially right at the beginning, I mean, there was one kid in particular who is wonderful. He heard what I was doing, and I was headed right down there after class, and he's like, can I come down and just check it out? You know, I don't really know anything about this. And he never left. He just started camping there that day. And And yeah, and so it's been a real opportunity for me to inform other people my age of what's going on, because I mean, I think this is something we've touched on quite a bit, is the biggest part is bringing public awareness to these issues, because a lot of people who are stuck, you know, watching mainstream media don't hear about a lot of the things that we're dealing with. So I've had a real opportunity, when people know that I'm doing this, to, you know, even outside of the actual site, to educate folks on why I'm there.
And before we get to the three questions at the end, you folks have an event coming up, Ryan. Can you briefly tell me about that? That you're going to be doing something related to campaign finance, I understand.
Yeah, there's going to be a political fundraiser at the Landmark on January 28th. It's $1,000 a plate, so it's, you know, very, very exclusive. Certainly most people would not be able to take part in that. So we'll be outside. You know, we haven't totally solidified our plans yet, but we will be generally asking people what they hope to buy with their $1,000.
And in a similar vein, I want to add that the Campbell Institute is sponsoring a public debate on a piece of policy that relates at least to the broader questions that your movement and you folks have been raising, and that's on whether we should increase taxes on the wealthy. This debate is on Wednesday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at the Everson Museum's main auditorium in downtown Syracuse. And on the team arguing in favor of increasing taxes are Elliot Spitzer, Len Berman, the Moynihan Chair at the Maxwell School, and Jennifer Hamlin-Navias, a minister and religious education director in the area. Opposing them will be State Senator John DeFrancisco, Kevin Hassett from the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., and Deb Warner, who's the Vice President for Policy at Center State CEO. This is free, and our listeners are invited. We're just asking everyone to RSVP to the Campbell Institute. Please check out our website. Now, on to the three questions. As we've done before in similar circumstances, what I'd like to ask each of you, and each of you take one of these, is to answer them, but from the perspective of the movement itself rather than your own life. So, Aaron, I'll start with you. Aaron, what's the title of the chapter of life this movement is currently living?
Gathering Force.
Okay. Ryan, what's the movement's worst trait?
Being outdoors.
And Caitlin, what achievement in the movement's life so far has surprised you the most?
I can't help but think back to the jobs that we've created, or at least the overtime for one, the police officers that are posted up at Merrill Lynch, and then the fire marshal that's been coming every 2 hours to say, hey, how's it going the last few days?
That was Caitlin Shanahan, Ryan O'Hara, and Aaron Williams of the Occupy Syracuse Movement. Thanks to all three of you for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
Support for the Campbell Conversations comes from the Campbell Public Affairs Institute, sponsoring a public debate on taxing the wealthy, February 1st at 7 p.m. at the Everson Museum of Art in downtown Syracuse. Information at maxwell.syr.edu/Campbell.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender and Kelly Coleman, with recording engineer Tom Fazio. Learn more about the Campbell Conversations by visiting our website, wrvo.org.